This is Django Rips, a podcast for learning web application development in Python using the Django web framework. We explore all of Django's features to equip you with the knowledge to build your own web app. I'm your host, Matt Lehman. Episode 5, How to Use Forms. Welcome back to Django Rips. On our last episode, we talked about templates, and over the course of the last couple of episodes, we've learned a bunch of skills about building Django applications, looking at URLs and views and templates, and those three things in tandem can build quite a website, if you think about it. It'll build a lot of read-only kind of stuff. So if you're making a marketing site that you want to add a little bit of dynamic behavior to, or you're making a site that just needs to display a lot of information, you're pretty good to go. But this time we're going to go a little deeper. We're going to move into the realm of interacting with users. In order to do that, we need to use forms. Forms are everywhere on the web. Every time you sign into a website, every time you fill out your first profile on some new site or add some information, what you're doing is interacting with a web form. And forms are built into HTML, but Django gives us tools to work with forms. So we're going to explore forms in depth on this episode and see all of the things that forms can do and what Django adds on top of web forms to make it easy to get input from your users. We're going to start with HTML forms themselves. You need a foundation of knowledge about forms and the tags that HTML provides before you can really see what Django's adding with its form system. So what I'm going to do is cover the elements that go into using web forms and describe some of their behaviors so that you get an idea of what you're supposed to do with a form, and then we'll turn our attention onto how Django uses forms in order to make it easy to create forms for your templates and get feedback from users. So if we look at web forms, it's really a set of HTML tags that work in tandem with each other. And the forms elements that we need to care about primarily are the form tag, the input tag, the select tag, and there are a couple of others, but those three tags are going to form the basis of most of what you would do with a form. So the form tag itself is where we need to start. It's the container that wraps around any other tag that goes with forms, and it is the thing that describes where the data is going to be sent to, how it's going to be sent, and a couple of other attributes. So we start by creating a form tag, and has a couple of critical attributes that we need to add to it. And one of them is called action, and the other is called method. The action tag attribute is probably better named as URL or destination. It's really instructing HTML of where to send the data when it is finally prepared. When the user has filled everything out and clicks the button that you would typically see on a form, where's that going to go? And so the action is specifying that location, where to send it back to the server in order to process that data. The method attribute on the form tag is describing how that data is going to be sent. And there are a couple of options that can be set in that. One is a value of get, and the other is a value of post. And those correspond to HTTP methods, which we've talked about a little bit in the past. And they affect the behavior of the form sending and how that HTTP request will be structured. So let's start with an example so that you can kind of get a flavor for this. The example is going to be a chunk of HTML. It's going to be a form tag, and it will have a method attribute with a value of get, and the action will be slash sum slash form slash. So two values for method and action, and the form tag. And then inside of it, we'll have a couple of pieces, and I'll describe the function of these pieces later, but just accept them for what they are now. There's going to be an input tag, and that will have an attribute of type text with a name attribute of message. And then there will be a button tag with a type attribute of submit. And inside of that button tag is just a label of send me, which is the button that somebody could click on. What's important about this so far is that we're going to focus on the method attribute of this. I said it was a get. So when somebody clicks that send button, what's going to happen? What the browser will do is take that data that is submitted. So if they're typing in this form, what they would see is a text box, and that's what the input tag was for. And they would type in some kind of message, because the input was called message. So we're going to use hello as our example. And when they click the submit button, what will happen is the data will be sent all entirely in the URL. And the reason for that is because they chose a method type of get. And the submission will look like /sum/form/, which is the URL part that we saw earlier. And then there'll be a question mark. And after the question mark will be message, followed by an equal sign, followed by hello, which was their input. So this is the form of a get submission for a form. And that is the simplest way to submit a form, but it has some downsides, but also has some upsides. So if you were going to use this method type, you probably want to do it for something that you don't want to save data on your server. Because it is in the URL, it's something that could be bookmarked, which is actually one of its advantages. But if you are changing your database every time somebody hits this request, that's going to have some side effects that you don't want. But it's great for a search kind of form. So you could imagine putting a form on your website that is an input box where somebody could search for some text. And by having a method of get, what they would submit might be to a URL like /search. And the name of the input for that form might be Q or something like that. And so the result of a search on your website could look like /search/?Q equal, and then whatever value they searched for. And so that's really nice, because that's something that that user could bookmark if it's a really common search that they are after, or something that they could share with somebody else if they're trying to find something on your website and they're working with someone else. So that's the get method form of sending form data to a server. The other method that can go in that form tag is a post. And when you do a post submission, you do that by changing the method attribute from get to post, it will send the data differently. It will send the data embedded in an HTTP request in the body. And so what that means is it won't show up in the URL. It's actually a part of a chunk of data that gets sent with the HTTP request. I'm not going to go too far into that, but you can go look at a little bit of the HTTP spec. You can go read about posts to understand how data is submitted there and the structure of that, but it will be in a different place essentially. And the reason you might want to use a post is for security purposes. So when you're logging into a site, for example, if you're logging into this standard conventional site that has a username and a password, you don't want to send your password in the URL of a request. There are all sorts of reasons for that. It has to do with like where that information gets stored by other users, where it gets seen in different parts of the internet. There are all sorts of spots where that would be really bad if you're sharing password information that way. But because of the way that post data is embedded in an HTTP request, that password information will not be seen if you're using a secure connection over HTTPS. And so that is the way that you will commonly see forms used these days, is with a post request in most circumstances, because a lot of the data that we want to send over the internet does have some sensitivity to it. And we want to protect our users' privacy as much as possible. So most of your form submissions will probably be using a method of post. So that's the form tag that acts as the container around the things. But now we need to talk about the tags that users can use to add their data. And that primarily comes from the input tag. The input tag is a very multi-purpose tag, and you can read a lot about it on Mozilla Developer Network. Input documentation is a really good place to go, for example, and I have a link to that in the show notes. But it's a very versatile tag, and it's versatile because you can change its type into a lot of different things. There's a type attribute that you can set on the input tag that will tell the browser, what do you want this thing to look like in its default format? So if you need, for example, a checkbox, you set the type to checkbox, and it will make something that is clickable and unclickable. Or if you need to set a password field that will show passwords as just kind of asterisk text instead of the actual password field, you can set the type as password. If you're looking for just a standard input box that receives text, you set the type as text. There are tons of these other input types that can go onto the input tag, and you should check out the full list at the documentation link that I just mentioned a second ago. The other attribute that is important for the input tag is the name attribute. And this attribute helps to identify different pieces of a form. And that's important because you're going to have different inputs in forms, and if the server can't tell them apart, then you're going to be in a bad spot. So imagine that you have a form that is taking somebody's address, for example, and one field is a city and one field is a state or province, you know, whatever your country happens to have. And if you had those two inputs as just input text boxes, and you didn't have a way to disambiguate between them, then the server on the other side is not going to know which one is which. So you add these name attributes to the two different inputs, and you can call one city, and you can call the other state. And that way, when it gets to your server, the server can pull those two pieces of information apart and do any extra checking on them that it needs to do. And without that ability to identify properly the different input, you would be hopelessly confused about what is the form data that you're receiving. So the name attribute is really critical in order to make input forms have all of the piece of information and all of them labeled clearly so that the server can react appropriately. Another kind of tag that we need to consider for forms is a select tag. A select tag is used less than an input tag, but it also has a very valid purpose. That the purpose of the select tag is to give users choices between a variety of options. And so if you have a set of options and you only want them to pick one or from a couple, and you have defined the actual set that you want them to choose from, then you would use a select tag. Otherwise, the user has the ability to put in freeform stuff in an input box, and you know, if you're trying to check against specific values, it would be really hard to make sure that they're doing the right thing. So those are sort of the core elements of forms. And I think that's enough for us to dive into the details of how Django uses forms to help make that management easier. Because by themselves, form management is a topic that is tricky sometimes and has other attributes that I have glossed over in this introduction, and Django smooths over all of those issues. So Django's form features, they act as a bridge. They act as a bridge between HTML forms, which we just spoke about, and Python classes and data types. So when we present forms to a user in a view, they see the form system, they interact with it in their browser, and then that data is packaged up with either that get or post method that I mentioned, and it's received on the server side. But before you want to start working with it, it'd be nice to transform the raw data that comes from the HTTP request into something that is native to the Python process. And the form is responsible for taking care of most of that. So let's start with an example to make this a little bit more clear. So I've got a Python file. It's applicationforms.py, and we're going to import forms from Django. And so we're going to start with a class. I'm going to call it contact form, and it's going to subclass from forms.form. And it will have three class level attributes on it. The first one will be name. And so it's name equal forms.car field with a max length attribute inside of that of 100. And there's email is email equals forms.email field. And then there's a third class level attribute of message, which is forms.carField of a max length of 1,000. So this is our example that we're going to work with for a minute. And as a reminder, all of this stuff is put in the show notes, so you can go see the examples if it's hard to get an understanding of what I'm saying in audio format. So the thing to start off with in our focus is that Django forms are subclasses of the form class that's in the Django forms package. This form class adds a lot of functionality and makes it so that what we have to do as users is pretty minimal. We have to declare the types of data that we want, but the form is going to do a lot of the work for us. And so the other thing to observe is that the data that we want is listed as class level attributes. That seems a little weird at first, but you're sort of declaring this is the data I desire, and the form system will take that definition and create form instances, actual Python object instances, and do the right thing with them. So it's a very declarative style of form declaration, and it makes for a really nice experience. So we can take our form and we can instantiate it in a view and pass it as context to a template. Those are all topics that we've covered in the past. And then when we want to render it, what the form system knows how to do is take the description that you've provided and actually produce a proper set of HTML inputs that you would put into a form tag. If our template had the format of double open curly braces form.asp double curly close braces, then that would render as actual proper HTML output. And I said asp because asp is a method that is on the form that instructs the rendering system to render the inputs in paragraph tags. The default form rendering, I believe, is to render it as an HTML table, but I find that the paragraph tags are simpler. So we're going to use that in our example because it's a little bit simpler HTML markup. When we do that form as P, it will render a chunk of HTML. And that HTML will have a P tag for a paragraph. And inside of that paragraph tag is going to be a label tag, which is something that goes along with HTML forms that I didn't describe, but it's a way to attach data to a specific input for accessibility. So if somebody's coming in with a screen reader and they're trying to read your form and they're visually impaired, then a label tells them through their screen reader of here's the input that you're about to type into, and this is what it's called. So it's really a good thing to have, and it's nice that Django generates that kind of stuff for us. So there's a label tag that, in matching to our contact form example from earlier, has a value of name, colon. And then following that label tag is an input type of text with a variety of attributes on it of type equal text, name equal name, max length equal 100, and then a required attribute, and then finally an ID attribute of a generated value. And so there's a couple more that are just like this, except with the subtle variations that are needed for the contact form. So there's another paragraph tag with a label with another input tag, and this time it's a type of email with a name of email that goes with our contact form. And then finally there's a third paragraph tag that has a label for the message and then an input type of text with a name of message and max length of 1,000, and all of that stuff matches up with the contact form from before. Django has done the work of generating the input tags for us. There's important things that have been left out of this, though, that I need to make sure that you see as part of what your responsibility is as someone writing a form that users can interact with. The first thing to notice is that Django did not actually render the form tag itself. And it didn't do that because there's some information that the form system doesn't know by itself. It doesn't know where you want to submit data back to. So the URL that goes into the action. It doesn't know how you want to submit the data, whether you want to do a get or a post method. So it leaves those up to you and makes it your responsibility to add the form tag that goes around the form. If we want to have a full template that does everything, then we would have something that looks like this. It would be a form tag with an action, and inside that action, we're going to use the Django template tag of URL, which we talked about previously, and it's going to have a value of some form view. So that will resolve itself to an actual URL path that will go into the action attribute. And then we're going to say method equal post. And inside of the form tag, we'll have the same form syntax that we did before of double open curly brace form.asp double close curly brace. And then to finish it off, there's an input tag that is a type of submit and a value attribute of send the form. So that's another method of creating a button. There's also one other element that we're going to gloss over mostly in this topic because security is a much deeper topic that I don't want to don't want to skirt around completely, but it's so deep that it would be a whole other episode. So in order to make sure that our form submission is actually protected, we need to add an additional element called a CSRF token. And a CSRF token is recognizing that the world is not such a safe place on the internet. There's a lot of people trying to do bad things and steal data, and CSRF is a protection mechanism that validates that the form data that's sent actually came from a valid user on your site. And so that's about as far as I'm going to say on it, but you should know that within that form tag, there's one extra piece that we need to add, and it's a template tag of CSRF token. And again, you can look at the example on the show notes to see what that looks like in action. But just trust that in order for your forms to work right now, you need to include that. Because if you try and do that and send a form submission to Django without that CSRF token, what you're going to see is an error that says that those things will fail because it's missing the security of the CSRF token. So that's all of the pieces that it takes to put a form together and render it in a template and get it displayed. So I think what we need to do now is turn our attention to the actual handling of that form data. So I'm going to describe a pattern that gets used for form views and is a very common pattern. So we'll talk through the elements of it so that you can get an understanding of what's happening. Our example looks like this. It's in a file of application/views.py, and we're going to do a couple of imports from the start. We're going to do an import of from django.http import HTTP response redirect, and from django.shortcuts import render, and from django.urls import reverse. And then we're going to have our a form itself. So from .forms import our contact form that we had from earlier. After the import of the contact form will be our view. I'm naming this view contact us, but again, the name doesn't really matter for this context. It's just an example. And the only argument that it's going to take is the request object. In the body of the view, we have an if statement, and it's if request.method == post. This is where the post itself will be handled, and the sequence is a little out of order. We'll go over the whole flow in a second, but let's go over the actual code first, and then I'll come back and describe the bits. So inside of that if clause, we have form equal contact form, and in the contact form and initializer, it will take request.post as its input. And then the next line is if form.isValid, and that's a new if block. And then inside of that if block, we'll have a comment where we would do whatever we're going to do with the form data, which we'll just ignore for the moment. And then the final thing that if block is going to do is return an HTTP response redirect on a reverse of some form success view. So something you want to display after the form submission is successful, you want to redirect a user to a new place. So now we're going to enter the else block of our request method post from earlier. And this time the else block is just going to contain form equals contact form. And then out of the if and the else block at the very last line of the view is a call to return render, and it takes its request, a template of contactform.html, and a context dictionary that has form as the key and the form instance as the value. So that's a lot of stuff. Again, examples are in the show notes. So let's break this down. How does this work? When a person comes to your form for the first time, the method for the form page should be a get request. So the if check on request.method will fail initially on the check for post, which means it will go into the else block. So it will create a form instance that receives no input arguments, which means it is a blank form. There's nothing in it. And then that piece of information will be rendered to the contact form HTML template with the form in the context. And if we assume that that contact form HTML template is just like the form that we discussed a little bit earlier, that form HTML that had all of the action method, CSRF token, all of that stuff in it, all of your form will be rendered properly there. The flow is they come to the view, they get the GET request, it gets rendered to them. And they now have, the user now has a form in front of them that they can fill in. They fill in the form with all of the attributes that were expected from the form, and they hit the send the form button. This time it comes back to the contact us view. And the difference is that the request type will now be a post request instead of a GET request, because the method that we set on the form in the template was a method of post. So now it's coming back in. And when it hits the if block this time, it will go into that if block because the method is a post. The data that the user submitted in that form is going to be stored in an attribute called post that is available on request. By adding that request.post to the contact form, we're putting the data into the form instance. And this is an important point. It's something that the Django documentation calls creating a bound form, because the data is bound to the form instance. So now that the form data is in there, we can actually check it. And to check it, we call a method called isValid on the form. That isValid method does a lot that we're going to talk about in a little bit. It does validation and a bunch of other things. And if it returns back true, then the form submission was successful and then it can be processed. And if it was false, what you will observe if you look at the code example is that it's going to fall out of the if block and fall to the bottom of the view and hit that render. And this time, when it renders, the form that will be rendered in the context will be a form that has the data that was submitted to the initially. And the difference will be is that if valid was false, means that the form did not validate correctly. And the data can be presented back to the user, and we can show them the errors that were in the form when the page is re-rendered with the stuff that they submitted. So a good example of why that form might fail is that we've included an email field on that particular contact form. So if a user types into the box for an email field and they say, I am not an email address, and manage to submit that, then form validation is going to check that with the isValid check, and it will determine, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't look like an email at all, so I'm going to fail and tell them you need to provide a valid email address. So that's an example, a quick example of why that isValid check might fail. And that really is the core of form handling. It's a very common form pattern of doing exactly what we described with checking on a post request versus a GET and rendering a new form or re-rendering a form that has errors and doing validation checking. In fact, it's so common that that pattern is baked into a class-based view that does the exact same thing and uses some different methods that you can hook into to provide a way of doing this that has less boilerplate, less things that you can get wrong in the process. So let's talk briefly about the class-based view, and then we'll move on to a different subject. If we're going to rework our example, we have application_views.py. This time we're going to import form view from django.views.generic. We're also going to import our contact form from the forms file that we had earlier. And now we have a class-based view. We're calling our class contactUs, and it's going to subclass from FormView. We're going to set a class-level attribute of the contact form. So form equals contact form. We're also going to set a template attribute of template equals contactform.html, that string value. We're going to set a success URL. So when the success case happened and we did a redirect to a new view, the class-based view will do the same thing, but you have to tell it where it needs to go. So we're going to override a method called getSuccessURL, and we're going to make it return a reverse of the same SumFormSuccessView that we had in our previous example. And then in order to do our work somewhere, we need to override a method called FormValid. And FormValid will take self as its first argument, like in all class methods, and form as the second argument. And then we have our opportunity to do work on the form like we did previously. And to finish it off, we're going to call return super and call the superclasses form valid method with a the form as the input argument. The reason we have to call super is because your contact form or this contact form in other contexts might inherit from other form classes, and we want to give the super class the chance to do form handling as well. So you should call super when you're working with the form valid method. So that's another way to do the form and use a class-based view instead. In this particular example, since it was so simple, it doesn't seem like it's adding a lot of value. But when you have more complicated forms in the future, and there's a variety of other stuff that we'll talk about, class-based form views are really helpful. That's the basics of form handling. And now, at this point, I think we need to turn our attention to some of the different kinds of fields you can use. Our contact form used a character field, which is a sort of a text field, and our form added an email field, which is a specialization of a text field that adds checking to make sure that the data that's submitted looks like an email address. But there are lots of other form fields that are available as well. Let's explore a couple of them, because you need to be exposed to different types and what they will do. And if you want to look at the full list of fields, the Django documentation has a very exhaustive list that you can check out. I've got a link to it in the show notes. We need to observe a couple of things about form fields. The form fields are designed to not only render stuff on the HTML output, but also to do data conversion to the Python data types. And the reason is because the form data that actually comes in when it's submitted with an HTTP request will essentially look like string data. And not everything is a string. Sometimes you want to work with Booleans. Sometimes you want to work with dates. Sometimes you want to work with totally different data types. And the fields in HTML forms are strings, but the fields in Django forms can do that conversion for you. For instance, if you have a Boolean field and that will translate to a checkbox on your form, you can get the checkbox, but rather than deal with a raw checked value that will be coming from the form, the Django system will take that value, do the checking on it, and convert it to either a true or false value so that you can do proper Python Boolean checking with it. The other thing to observe about fields, as I said, is they dictate what kind of rendering happens with the HTML. But this is sort of customizable. There is a default, but you can change it. And the way to change that or know how this rendering happens at all is with what Django calls widgets. So each field has a widget associated with it. And the widget dictates what will show up for that field type. So as I mentioned, the Boolean field will show a checkbox on the output in HTML, and that's because the widget type associated with it is a checkbox input, which is an input tag that has a type of checkbox. So each field includes its own default widget, but you can change that. If you have a field that is custom for some reason, you can select a different widget, or there's really standard cases that you might want to change that. And a good example is the character field. As we saw in our first example, the character field will create an input type of text. And that's your standard one-line text box that you'll encounter on HTML forms everywhere. But what if you want to use something much larger? Like I had that contact form, and it had a message place, but what we actually would have seen there is a one-line input box, and that would have been a really poor user experience. Like it had a limit of 1,000 characters, and so the standard input box does not expand at all. And so if somebody typed an entire paragraph, but they only saw about 40 to 50 characters at any moment in time, that would be really terrible. So what you can do is you can switch the widget to a different type. And the most appropriate type in that context where you want to accept a lot of data from a user is an HTML text area tag. And you've probably encountered these when you've explored the web before. It's a text box that fills up multiple lines and gives you a box to see that you can see what you're typing over many lines. If you switch a character field and set the widget to a text area widget, then it would change from that one line into a multiple line thing. So we also spoke briefly about the email field, and the nice part about some of these fields is that Django is trying to help you out by using the things that are based in HTML5 validation. So in older versions of HTML, HTML has been a specification that's been out for a very long time. There were a lot of input tags that did very little. Most of the time you would use text, and you had to rely on the server to do all of the checking on it. But with the advent of HTML5, which came out a number of years ago at this point, there were additional types that were added. And those types could do checking for you on the browser side. So with an email field, for instance, you could have an input tag, but the type would be email. And this is a hint to modern browsers to check it for an email. So before the user even sends any information to you with their submit button, the browser can say, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't look like an email field. You need to fix this. And it's a safeguard that you can add that will do client-side validation. Now, there are times and there are ways that can still be broken, because not every browser will actually honor that system, and not all of them will do it 100% consistently. So you still may need to do some checking, which is what Django will do with an email field. It will also check if the output from the user looks like an email address, but having it on both the client side and the server side makes it so that there's this double level of checking, and it means that there might be fewer submissions of erroneous data to your server. It's a nice add to the system. Another type of field is the date field. And the date field actually seems mostly like a character field. It has the same input type of text and will render the same input style box. But the difference comes when the field returns the data back to the server and what the Django form system will do with it. So when the data is cleaned up and validated, the date string that is provided by a user will be converted into a Python date object. And Django will use a variety of string formats that it will accept. There's a default list that can be controlled, but if I use something like 5, 9, 20 in an American style month, day, year format, it will convert it to a date object that matches that format. And the default uses American styles, but if you want to use something that the rest of the world uses, you can change that default list. It will also accept a year, month, day style that is non-locale specific, so you can do that too. But those settings are customizable in your settings in your project. That is an example of a field type that uses a standard input, but actually changes it to a data type that's more useful when you're processing it. A choice field is another example that's useful to use because it uses that select tag that we talked about earlier. And the choice field gives you options that you can insert. And the best way to talk through this one is to go through an example. So we're going to use a new example. We're going to consider a form where you're asking somebody for their favorite meal. So we've got an application forms.py file, and in that file, we're going to do from Django import forms, and we've got our form, which is a class called survey form, which again, subclasses from forms.form. And in the survey form is a class level attribute. It's a list, and it's a list of tuple pairs. And each of those tuple pairs have strings inside, and it's the strings are a lowercase b in the first string with a value of breakfast as the second part of the tuple pair, and then L and lunch and D and dinner. Again, examples are in the show notes. And the next part we are going to add is a class level attribute to the survey form called favorite meal, and its favorite meal equal forms.choice field, and inside of that choice field, we're going to say choices equals meals. And what this will do is render a select tag in the output. So the HTML will look like a paragraph tag with a label like previously, but then it will include a select tag. And inside the select tag is a name attribute of favorite meal. And within the select itself are three option tags. So option is another tag that gets paired with select to actually specify what is going to be shown. And so our option tags will have an attribute of value equal b, with inside of the option tag will be breakfast. And then similarly, option value L with a value of lunch and one for dinner as well. And what this does when it gets rendered by a browser, the way your browser is going to interpret that is using a dropdown. You would pick your dropdown and you'd pick from breakfast, lunch, or dinner. That's what the user would see. And when that data is then submitted back to the server, the value part of the option tag is what's going to come back to the server of that B, L, or D. There's no reason for choosing short values. It's just what I chose to make the example short, but you could pick anything you wanted for the values that you want to work with. That's a handful of fields that I think you will commonly use. They're input tags that allow you to collect data from users. It shows how fields can convert to different data types that you want to interact with on the other side. And it shows how there's some checking that the fields can do to clean up your data. All of that gets mixed in with fields. So fields are a super powerful part of the form system that really describes the translation layer between the HTML world and the Python world. There are a few attributes that apply to all fields that you should probably be aware of that I think are worth knowing about. The first attribute that I think you should be aware of is the required attribute. So sometimes you have forms where some of the data is optional and some is not optional, like an address form where you have to care about somebody's street address, but you know, there's a lot of address forms that will include a secondary part for an apartment number or something like that. But if somebody doesn't live at an apartment and you want that field to be optional, you can make it so that that second part is not required for that kind of form. There's another attribute called label, and that can control what is the default that gets associated with the label tag that's used for accessibility. So in our example of a favorite meal, our label was favorite meal colon. But if this was actually a survey, you might want to ask a question. So if you added a label attribute and changed the value to what is your favorite meal question mark, that is what will appear instead of favorite meal colon. So that would make a much better survey experience. And there are other times where you might want to display some help information about a field that might be confusing, or you want to offer additional guidance. So there's a help text attribute that can be added to fields that will render an additional tag of a span tag with a CSS class of help text on it that you can style with your forms so that users can see additional information as they're filling out your form. There are lots of other general attributes that you can add to a form, and you can go check out the documentation to see what all of those options are. At this point, we've seen how views render HTML. We've seen the process of how that data comes in. We've understood that there are field types that you can use that do data conversion, that do checking on the clients. But there's a final layer of this form system, and it is that isValid method. That isValid method that checks the form to see if it's okay or not. We need to consider that because that thing is doing a lot of work under the covers. And we'll talk through not every bit that it does, but the major components of what isValid is checking on so that you have an understanding of how the whole system pulls together. The isValid method acts as the linchpin in form handling because it takes the raw data that comes from the users and it transforms it into that format that you can process on the other side and do what you want with. When isValid runs, it will do a lot of things. It'll check each field and do what's known as cleaning on it. Cleaning is the process of checking that the data matches the type, like with the email validation. It's also the process of where the raw string data is converted into the Python data types. So every field has the ability to do that conversion for whatever is appropriate for that data type, and isValid is the place where that calculation actually happens. When isValid is true, when everything validates at the other side, all of the form's data that has been cleaned up will be stored in a dictionary called cleaned data that is attached to the form. So you will access it through that attribute, and that's how you would process the data on the other side. So let's think about it in terms of an example. Imagine that you had a contact form or a feedback form that users would submit if they're having a problem on your site or something like that, and you have an integration with some kind of help system, ticketing system, and you can make API calls and send that data off to support agents that might be able to help with whatever the problem is. We're going to just jump straight into the heart of a view and ignore the boilerplate that goes around it, and we're going to focus on the particular if form valid check. So we've got this chunk of Python code. It's the if block that has the form.isValid call, and now we're inside of the body of that clause. And so in order to get the data that we want to pass on to the ticket system, our form is going to, we're going to assume that the form has an email field and a comment field. And those are the two things that are going to be sent to the form system. So we're going to say email equals form.cleanedEmail, and this is a dictionary access, so it would take a key of email as a string. And then we'll have a comment that's very similar, comment equal form.cleanedData, and with a key of comment. And it's going to pull out both of those pieces of information, and we're going to call a hypothetical function called create support ticket that will take email and comment as the input. And then finally, the last line of the if clause is to do an HTTP response redirect on a feedback received view that we can redirect the users to. That example is to illustrate that clean data is where you access stuff from. And you know, an email and a comment, those are both strings, but those could have been different data types had the, you know, the field type been something more like a Boolean or a date field or one of those other options. So that's the true case. That's what happens when isValid was successful. Everything will be in clean data. It's accessible to use. You can process it as you need to. What happens when isValid returns false? What did Django do under the covers there? When isValid is false, we need to figure out where it failed. And so what Django will do is have another place where errors are stored. And this attribute is called errors. So it's form.errors. And the variety of those errors can vary a little bit. There are dictionaries and lists and a little bit of variance depending on the type of field that is there or the type of error that can happen. But generally, though, all of that stuff will be stored on errors. And when you re-render your form, Django will take any errors that it found and render those out alongside the form field and show you, hey, this is where the field was wrong, and here's the reason why. So the form validation process can check for errors and report the specific error type that failed. A good example might be maybe a user input a date field format that it didn't recognize. It was not in the default list and it didn't look like a date. And so the form says, I don't know what that date is. So it will render back an error to the user. So Django's doing a lot of heavy lifting for us here of catching those errors, finding them, attaching them to the form, and giving you a nice, concise, clean place to come back and render them all back on the template side. Let's look at an example to see some of this in action. Because the additional thing that we can do is add form validation ourselves. So the fields will do validation on the type, but there are times where you might want to add additional validation that you care about for your own form. So our example is going to be a silly one, and we're going to imagine a website that is made only for Bobs. And so in our example, we're going to have a signup form. And so we've got applicationforms.py. We're going to do from Django import forms. And we have our signup form class, which is a subclass of forms.forms. And we have an email field of email equal forms.email field and a password field of forms.car field with a widget equal forms.password input. So that's going to use that input type of password so that that'll be obscured. Now the difference comes in the validation. The part of this form that adds the custom validation that we want to do comes from adding a clean method to our email field. And in order to add cleaning methods, you have to follow Django's convention of defining a method that has the field name prefixed by clean underscore. So we've got a method called def clean underscore email. And that method will do extra validation on the email field after it's gone through some processing. It doesn't take any input arguments because the way to access the email that comes from the system is from the cleaned data. These clean validation checks run after the field has been validated. So our clean method looks like this. It's email equal self.cleaned data with a key access of email. And then we're going to do a check, an if check of if Bob not in email, then inside of that if clause, we're going to raise, and we're going to raise forms.validationError. And that validation error instance is going to take a string of sorry, you are not a Bob as a sentence. And then finally, at the bottom of the clean, we're going to return the email. So there are some important attributes to point out of this. And the first is to note that this will only clean the email field. It's not going to ignore password. It's very specific to the field type that you declared. And that's important because you don't want to mix these validations. That would be a crazy system in that way. If validation fails, and that's if somebody doesn't have Bob in their email address, then you want to raise a validation error. The Django form system will catch validation errors and package them up and put them in that errors attribute that I talked about earlier. That's what will be exposed to the user, and that's the data contract that the form system expects when there's a problem. When everything is good, you also need to be sure to return the cleaned data. If you don't return it, you're not adhering to the form interface that Django expects, and things won't go well for you. So you got to remember to return that cleaned attribute. But those couple of things in together work to add the extra checking that you want. And this example is really ridiculous and, you know, silly on purpose, but you can get the idea of you can put any additional logic that you want to check for, and any stuff that pertains to your project or business can go in there to make sure that the data that is coming into your system is appropriate for whatever you're trying to do. And I think that the form validation process here is perfect for adding customization to your project to really clean things up. There's another kind of validation that happens, though, and that validation that happens is when you have multiple pieces of data that interact with each other to do some checking. And in that scenario, you can't just rely on one clean method. You have to rely on a separate place to do this work. And that place is with just a generic clean method. It doesn't have any underscore after it. It doesn't have any field names with it. But it is a method that gets called towards the end after all of the other validators have run and clean methods have run in order to give you an opportunity to check on data that interacts with each other. So let's consider another example. And in this example, we're going to think about a genealogy website. And our genealogy record that we're going to care about is a simplistic version that has somebody's name, when they were born, and when they died. And to my knowledge, everybody is born before they die. So let's add a check to our form that ensures that the birth date is before the death date. And if it's not, we want to raise the validation error. So we've got a form, and this is in applicationforms.py, and we're going to say from Django import forms, and we've got a forms class, and I'm calling this class a historical person form, and it's going to subclass from forms.form. And the first class attribute that we'll have is name equal forms.carfield, and the next one is date of birth equal forms.datefield, and date of death equal forms.datefield. And then we're going to add a clean method to it. And the way to get the clean data is to call super on the clean method. So we get clean data equals super.clean. We're going to pull the date of birth and date of death out of the cleaned data. But there's something important to note here. The clean method runs all the time after the form validation. But the clean methods from before could have failed validation. Like maybe somebody put in an invalid date of birth, and so it's already failed. In that circumstance, what Django will do is remove any invalid stuff from cleaned data. So you can't just do a key access on it, as we did in the other example, because you could get a key error, because that field might not be in the cleaned data. So you have to be a little bit more careful with the clean method to do the right thing. We're going to call cleanedData.get date of birth to get out of a dictionary, and which will return a none if the key was not there. So we're going to say date of birth equals cleanedData.get, then the string date of birth. And then the next line is date of death equals cleanedData.get date of death. And both of those things might be none if the validation failed. So if we're going to do our check to do the proper comparison between them, we need to be a little defensive. So we need to say if date of birth and date of death and date of birth greater than date of death, then if those are true, then we want to raise our validation error and say birth date must be before death date. The important part about that if was that we had to add the date of birth and date of death checks to ensure that they were truthy before doing the comparison on them, because they could have both been none. And if we had just done date of birth greater than date of death and not done those checks, we could have done a comparison between a none type and a date, and Python would not have been happy with that. That's the validation check to make sure that those two dates are consistent with each other. And at the bottom of our clean method, we return the clean data. That's how you can do custom validation on multiple pieces of data that have a relationship between each other. At this point, we've seen how to do forms. We've seen how you can collect data from users so that you can interact with them. We've seen web forms and the form HTML tag and all of its related tags. We've seen the Django form class, and I've given examples of Django views that can use the form class to pull all that information together to process it correctly. We've seen how forms are rendered with widgets, and we've talked about field types and how all that data is displayed. We've talked about what fields can go into forms, what is the implications of that, what you might choose, and where you can go look if you want to find out all the fields that are available. And then finally, we've talked about form validation, the method of how Django does the conversion from raw HTML form input into data types that are useful by your code to do additional checking. We talked about custom form validation and how you might augment forms that are there to make them even richer experiences. And that brings us to the end of this discussion about forms. In the next episode, we're going to talk about taking data that you might get from a user and storing it somewhere. In all of this discussion so far, we haven't talked about storing anything. And I did that on purpose because I wanted you to get a view of making the ability to present a website, to present something to the user. And then we're moving down the stack and moving into how do you take data from a user and do something with it. And then we're moving into this discussion of now that you've got the data from the user, where can you actually put it? How can you put it to your advantage and help a user do something with it to make your sites richer and richer? And so our next discussion will be focused on the process of collecting data from users and storing it into a database. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining in. The show notes for this episode can be found at mattlehman.com/DjangoRiffs/5.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Django Riffs. You can follow the show at DjangoRiffs.com. If you have something to share, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is mblehman, or follow the Django Riffs handle to keep up with the show. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate or review on iTunes, Spotify, or from wherever you listen to podcasts. Your rating will help others discover the podcast, and I would be very grateful. Django Riffs is supported by listeners like you. If you can contribute financially to cover hosting and production costs, please check out my Patreon page at www.patreon.com/mblehman. The theme music for Django Riffs is Open Roads, used with permission from Purple Planet Music. I hope you'll join us next time to learn more about Django. Take care.